Welcome to the first episode of Writers Wednesday and happy Valentine's Day. I have had a blast creating these episodes and I hope you find them fun and informative. Before we dive in, here are a few announcements. Our next expert training for authors will be this Saturday, February 17th at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Indie and traditionally published author Sarah R. Turnquist will dive into formatting software for authors. Her training will look at three formatting softwares, Vellum, Atticus, and Scrivener. Sarah will provide a brief overview of formatting in general, and then we will discuss some pros and cons of each software. This training is free for HCRW members and $17 for non-members. You can find a link to join below this blog post. If you are an aspiring author of historical Christian romance, then I invite you to join our fellow authors. In HCRW, we enjoy productive and encouraging critique meetings twice a month. We have informative expert trainings once a month that equips us with the knowledge and tools to make our writing dreams a reality. You can learn more and become a member today by clicking the button below. And I'm looking forward to writing with you. So be sure to sign up for our newsletter to stay up to date on all that is happening here at Literary Scape. This week's Writers Wednesday episode brings back one of our favorite authors here at Literary Scape, Julie Lessman. Julie is an award-winning author whose tagline of "Passion with a Purpose" underscores her intense passion for both God and romance. A lover of all things Irish, she enjoys writing close-knit Irish family sagas that evolve into 3D love stories, the hero, the heroine, and the God that brings them together. Julie has also written a self-help workbook for writers entitled Romanceology 101, Writing Romantic Tension for the Sweet and Inspirational Markets. So I am, again, just excited to have Julie here for our first Writers Wednesday episode, where we get to just dig in with some authors and talk about their writing journey. So let's just start off with, what has the journey from traditionally published to indie published been like for you?
Okay. Well, first of all, for me, it was easier. And what I mean by that is, I can write my own copy, my jacket blurbs. I can design my own covers. I loved working with Revell. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they're the best. I loved everybody I worked with. And I love my covers. I especially love A Passion Most Pure. But I have definite ideas about things. And so I wanted to do my own cover. And that's what I like. That's what I like about going to indie. I mean, I design all my own covers, all my copy. I write it all. You know, you have to. And as far as the copy, the jacket blurb copy, I would get the copy from the copywriter and I would read it and I'd go, that's not what I want to say. It doesn't do it. And I would give it to Natasha. I would write some and I'd give it to Natasha and I'd say, okay, here's hers. Here's mine. Which way? She goes, there's no question, Julie. She says, you could get a job doing this. She says, if your books don't sell, you could do jacket blurb. Copy. So that I love. I love having that control. Nobody telling me what I can do or what I can't do. I like the freedom I have to be able to say spiritually what I want to say. Because I go in far more depth than a publisher would let me. And I mean, that's why I'm here writing this stuff. So I can take the lessons I've learned the hard way and put them into my characters' lives to teach others. That's one of my main goals. Okay. So that was wonderful. All that was wonderful. But it's definitely more difficult when it comes to promotion. I mean, if you're you're with a publisher, you can get into Sam's, you can get your books into Sam's and Walmart. You get into all these bookstores like I was able to get it, you know, in Barnes & Noble and Borders a lot. You know, as indies, unless you're a big name, and it's hard to be a big name as an indie, okay? Mm-hmm. It's just you. it's just little old you. I mean, I the only thing I have at my, you know, is social media. So, you know, what do you, you know, and then Facebook and all those, they limit you.
Yeah.
Unless you pay for ads, they limit you to this small little group. Even BookBub, who I love, you know, if I do a pre-order alert, you know, I have something like, I had something like 12,000 followers on BookBub, which is, it's a pretty decent amount compared to a lot of the other Christian authors I know, some of them very big names, and their numbers on BookBub aren't that good. Okay. But the problem is that even the pre-order alerts only go out to like half of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're stymied everywhere. And I mean, it's just me. So how, what am I going to do? Get on top of a roof and yell? I mean, it's just, I have tried everything. I have tried every trick in the book, including a publicist. And it's just tough, Melissa. It's tough. Now I'm going to give you a statistic that is going to blow you away.
Okay.
Okay. The reason I looked into this was because, you know, as you know, you have offered my latest book, A Dare and a Prayer. I am giving a good portion of the proceeds to my to the ministry, a child trafficking ministry that I support. Okay, and when I told you that, you also committed to doing something based on how many books I sold. Okay, so I thought, well, you know, gosh, you know, there's not that many. I mean, the proceeds are good because the proceeds are, you know, it's a royalty is higher. And so per that many books, it's good. Okay.
Yeah.
But so I thought, well, gosh, I feel like a loser. So I went online to look. I mean, when you asked me, how is it doing? I said, we're doing great. But I didn't realize that's all my books. Because it's all my books. When I broke out A Dare and a Prayer, it surprised me that it wasn't more. But listen to this. A shocking statistic I discovered this week from a number of reliable sources, including Publishers Weekly, is that an average book published by a professional publisher sells 3,000 copies over its entire lifetime. Now, I find that hard to believe because when I was first with Revell, my first three books, all of them went over 30,000. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Now, second series, it was about the time when the market just plummeted because I thought it was me. It went in half. It was all of them sold over, this was as of 2018, over 15,000. Okay. But so that was half of what was before. And it was like, oh my gosh, that's terrible. And Natasha said, no, Julie, every author on the market has been hit with a 50% cut. I mean, that was back when, see, this is, the market's tough, Melissa. It's very tough. Okay. But I found that hard to believe.
Yeah.
But that's the average. So you got people like me that made a lot more. Okay. Mm-hmm. And people like, you know, top names, Karen Kingsbury, they're way off the charts. They're super bestsellers. Okay.
Yeah.
But that shocked me. Okay. And then listen to this. Research also shows, of those 3,000 books for that average professionally published author, the first year only netted 250 to 300 copies. Now, see, again, I find that hard to believe because A Dare and a Prayer has already it's past that, you know.
Okay.
So it's like research shows that the average self-published digital-only book only sells about 250 copies in its lifetime. I didn't just go to one site. I went to site after site, and that is what they're saying. That's shocking. This one article that I read was saying, this is pretty discouraging for authors, but this is the truth. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that hard to believe because, well, my first indie book, A Light in the Window, it was over 15,000 copies. That was my indie book. That's pretty darn good. And what my publisher told me when I was with Revell, they said, the mark is 10,000 books. You have to sell 10,000 books to get another contract.
Wow.
Okay. And I did. So I kept getting contracts. Mm-hmm. But that's a high mark. They said I read something. This is funny. I didn't put it in here, but I read it said that if you're an indie publisher and you sell 10,000 books in a lifetime for a book, that's almost impossible. I mean, for the average, it's impossible to do. It's akin to winning the lottery and getting bitten by a shark. That's what I read, because it's,
oh my goodness.
I don't mean to discourage you, and I don't mean to discourage other authors, but you need to be aware of what the market is. Not that there aren't people making money out there. There are. Okay. But the average indie author, these are the statistics. That was pretty, pretty shocking to me. Okay. Anyway, so that's the part I would say. I mean, I'm almost, you know, I wanted to go back. Maybe I even tried pitching a Wing and a Prayer to Revell. And although they liked it, they have those publishers, those Christian publishers, they have stables of writers. And what that means is there's one Amish writer, there's one World War II writer, there's a couple of contemporary writers, there's a fantasy writer. I mean, you think about it. This is what they do. They might have one or two in each stable, but there's not a whole slew of them, okay? Mm-hmm. And so when I went, I knew I was, you know, because Sarah Sundin is their resident World War II author, and she wins awards, and she's just amazing. I mean, she's amazing. Yeah. And so here, and what was the real killer was my story was similar to hers, because my story was about an aeromedical pilot, and hers was as well. So, and they were going to be both coming out like at the same time. So they turned me down because of that. They said, we can't afford two World War. I mean, that's what they said. I don't know. That was way back a number of years ago.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's the scoop on the indie versus the pub. So I even tried to go back and into the publishing world as a hybrid, you know, to do my own, but also to be published by a publisher. And let me tell you how hard it is. It is so hard. It is so hard, you know, because they look at numbers. And as an indie, you know, my numbers are not even in the same ballpark as what they were as a published author. So.
Right. I think that's why, too. And I don't know if you've heard this, you know, going to different conferences and things like that for writers. There's this change in thinking or this momentum. I don't know how you want to label it, to move towards indie. Have you heard a lot of talk of that?
No, but tell me about it.
So, and this is me working with aspiring authors, and they come up against this. Like, they have amazing. I have one author; her novel is absolutely amazing. I think you've read it, Carrie's. At least you've read part of.
I've read parts of it. She's an excellent writer. Yeah,
excellent. And she finished it, and I read through the whole thing. And I am telling you, it has amazing potential. But now, what she's coming up against is, how do I get it published?
It's very hard to do.
And so that was another reason why I started that writing group for historical Christian romance writers, is that the marketing piece, if you can partner, promote with other authors in your genre, that is a huge bonus to the marketing. But anyways, I totally understand what you're saying. It is hard to crack in.
A published award-winning author who had great numbers. Now, like I said, they and that's what they say too, that the first book sells great, second book not so much, third book even less. That's typical. And another typical is you don't want to go past three books. That was Revell's policy. So I talked them into doing the second series with the rest of the O'Connors. They didn't want to. They didn't want to because of this premise they have that, I mean, it's true. They bear it up with statistics that it just doesn't. That's why they limit
the read through
the trilogy. And but I talked them into it, And it was just at the time when the market hit bad. So, you know, that's yeah. what happens, you know.
No.
And let's face it, they're not in it for to make a living, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like we are. We'd like to make a living writing. What are three things you know now about the writing industry that you wished you knew at the beginning of your writing career?
The number one, and I'm sure you've heard me because we've talked so much, you know.
Yeah.
The number one thing that I wish I knew, really and truly knew, was how a writing career could become an idol in your life. Hovering at the throne, at the base of God's throne. Now, I'm a Christian author. God is my number one. He's my all in all. But after I got published, it's this hamster wheel. I mean, you're suddenly, you know, you got the publisher wanting you to do well, so you're out there promoting yourself while they're promoting you, and entering contests, and the contests mean something, and the sales mean something, and the Amazon rankings mean something, and you're just pushes, and it controls you. It controls you. It controlled me. And I remember before I was published, I was at my first ACFW conference I ever went to, and Francine Rivers was the speaker. And I'm sure you've heard all my stories, but basically she was saying how she does not look at her royalty statements. Her husband handles them. She does the publisher, Tyndale or whoever it was, they wanted her to enter contests, and she refused. She refused. She would not let them enter her in contest. And I remember sitting there, just like you did. Look, I remember thinking, are you crazy, lady? Are you crazy? Oh, my gosh. I thought she was crazy. I remember saying it to the other people at the table. And that's what I wish I knew. She told me, but I didn't buy it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I got into it that I saw how it can destroy you. I mean, I remember begging God for years, God, please give me a lobotomy. Take that part of my writing career out of my head, where I want to win contests, where I want to get good sales, where I want the acclaim. It destroys you, Melissa. It destroys you. It took me up until, that's why I went indie. I mean, because I took a sabbatical. I didn't want it anymore. I had to get away from it. I wanted to write for the sheer love of writing and to please God and not for the sales. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. It's been the last couple of years where I finally have been set free from that, you know, and I'm grateful to God for that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I didn't even think about that, but I can definitely see that happening.
Yeah. It's a real catch-22, and you can talk to any author. They all go through it.
Yeah. Did you have another one or oh, no? Was that your?
Well, that's my biggie. The second one is a stupid one. Book signings. I used to do book signings all the time. I would go to other towns and do book signings, and it was so much work. And I remember, and I finally said to Ravel, I said, are book signings worth it? And they looked at me and they go, no.
Oh, nice.
And I said, what? And they said, no, they're not worth it. They don't really sell books.
Wow.
Yeah. Now that was a shocker to me, but it's true. They don't, you know? I mean, you got a handful of people that come. I mean, my first couple books I would have as I had people waiting in line. My first couple books, it was amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then if I would go to a conference with Ravel where they would have you sign, they give you a slot of time where you would go and sign. And I remember the lines just going around and around. But I mean, they also they didn't get free books. They had to buy them and then they got them signed. But it doesn't work today.
Yeah.
and the third thing was, I wish I had known to go for an agent first instead of querying all these publishers. I think I queried how many publishers? 25 publishers and then 25 agents. But But it was the publishers that I was focused on. And that's when I realized you got to get an agent. You're not going to get published in the Christian market or just about any other if you don't have an agent. That's just the way it is. And I'll give you a good example. I met my editor at an ACFW conference. I had a conference with her. You know how you do it, ACFW, sign up. And I gave her my pitch. And what did she say to me? She said, okay, that's great. And she said, send me the manuscript. So I sent her the manuscript. And 3 years later, she's the one that I got a contract from. She never read my manuscript. It was in a slush pile for 3 years in her office. Because, she told me to send it. But that wasn't how I sold the book. I sold the book because my agent is good friends with her. And I wanted my agent to pitch it to Bethany House because that was where I wanted to go. And she said, no, you need to go to Revell. They're a little more liberal about about the type of stuff. You're right, Julie. And so she sent it to Lonnie and got a 3-book deal. Boom. Just like that. Okay. But that same book was sitting in her office in a slush pile. So, I mean, get an agent. That's really key. Mm-hmm. Also, just something. I have a list of more than 8 things that I did to get published that if anybody would want it, all they have to do is contact me through my website and I'll send it to them.
Okay. I'll put a link to your website on this blog post too, so they can easily get to that.
Great.
But when you're working on your writing, what are your top 3 resources that you go to?
Okay. My top 3 resources. And let me see what I did here. Number one, first and foremost, are my prayer partners. I don't write a book unless I pray. And it's not just one time praying. They have me on their list and I tell them what to pray for. I pray for supernatural productivity, supernatural anointing, a good plot, a surprise. I mean, you can help me to like a character. That's my number one resource. If I didn't have those girls, and if we didn't pray about this stuff, I doubt. And sometimes when I'm proofing, I sit there and go, I didn't write this. You wrote this. I didn't write this. No, I mean, seriously, because without him, it's nothing.
Yeah.
And so that's my number one resource. My number two resource is One Look Thesaurus. It's an online dictionary that is always open on my desktop. Always, always. It is the most amazing. You might want to put that link in there too. And what it is like, I'll give you an example. When you're proofing your book, I notice that I'll use the word obviously a gazillion times. So you go in there, you find substitutes for obviously, and you can come up with a whole slew of them. It's amazing. And, there's so many words that you can use. And let me tell you, the readers call you on it. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. In a review, if she uses the word slack his hip one more time, seriously. I mean, they will nail you to the wall. So this really helps you to switch it up. And you have to do it because if they start to catch that you're using this word too many times, they'll nail you on it.
Yeah.
Right away it says to them, she's not that good if she can't come up with something new.
Right. It's very repetitive.
And then the third thing that is obviously, I don't want to say Google because I don't like Google because I don't like Google.
Yeah.
I think they're globalist. I think they're not, it's not a great company, in my opinion.
Right.
But unfortunately they have a lock on that, except I use DuckDuckGo whenever I can. And I don't know how much better DuckDuckGo is, except it's not Google.
We use DuckDuckGo all the time too. That's our search engine. So
I mean, if we as Christians don't start standing up and bucking against some of these companies that hate our guts,
yeah,
I mean, we got to do it. Got to do it. Don't get me started.
Oh, I know. I could go there with you. We could do a whole episode on that, I'm sure.
My husband says I am a fire hose. Don't ask her a question. He's a fire hose.
That's all right. What is your top recommendation for aspiring authors as they work toward becoming a published author?
I would say it's the number one thing on my list that I have published, and that is join a writing organization that focuses on the type of books you want to write. For instance, since I am a Christian romance writer, I joined American Christian Fiction Writers, and Hope, Love, and FHL. I don't think they're defunct now. And that you have to get in with like kind. In fact, it's so funny because so many of the gals that I met there were really aspiring authors. All the years that I went to ACFW, I remember sitting with them in the lobby bar, and they were so hopeful, and you know, and they would say how much they love my books or another author's book. They're all the authors that are out there today. You're Jamie, right?
Oh.
She writes those mysteries, those spooky mysteries. Jamie Jo,
yes.
Or I can't think of what her name is now, but there's so many of them that they're now the top authors at the houses. So you want to go, you want to spend time. It doesn't seem like it's worth it to spend the money for a conference, but it is for a number of reasons, because you get like-minded, you make friends, you network. You meet people that can help you later on. You can get edits from published authors and really give you some great things, suggestions and stuff. And you get in front of publishers and agents. You get to pitch to them, which is huge. Mm-hmm. And the more they hear your name, you know, they have contests, and contest is another one. It's one of the ones on here. You need to enter contests to get your name out there, you know.
Yeah,
that's what I would recommend.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. That's one of the reasons why I started my writing group, because I am a member of ACFW, and I actually am on the board for my state chapter. But
cool,
which I love, and I love connecting with everybody in. But there's so few in there.
Yeah,
at least in my local, that write in my genre, and so what I found, like, I'm trying to give advice to a sci-fi writer, and they're trying to give advice to me, and that we don't write in each other's genre. Right.
Yes.
And so that's when I went, I really just need one that's just historical Christian romance. And so that's why I went, let's do that. Because then again, like I mentioned earlier, and like you said, we can then start networking together, right? Share my book out with your email list. I'll share yours out with mine, you know? So that's the goal anyways.
That is the goal. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us for our first Writers Wednesday.
I always enjoy talking to you, Melissa. We are on the same wavelength, girl.
I know. I love it. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please consider following our podcast on your favorite podcast platform, along with on Facebook and Instagram. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.